best for all of us that we're here to receive today. And that would be amazingly presumptive of us if it wasn't your declared purpose to be the God who gives. Certainly there are times you take things from me, but only because they're not yet good. We're not fully good. The psalmist declares that no good thing do you withhold from those who walk uprightly because of Christ, not by our own doing. Here we stand as those right in Him. And I believe this morning that you're a God who gives, withholding no good thing. It's not presumptuous for us to come asking, seeking, receiving. Jesus, you said that if we're weary and heavy laden, we can come and we'll find rest. Lord, that's way more. We need way more than good advice or counsel. We need to experience you in such a real and deep way that we're changed by that and we taste rest. You tell us if our souls are thirsty and we can't find in the world around us the things that we think will satisfy us, we come and find in you what our souls need. That's more than just a Bible story or two. That's transforming grace, transforming power, your presence in our lives. We need that really very much today. The author of the letter of Hebrews said that when we come to you, we have to believe that you are, and that you are the rewarder of those who diligently seek you. And so we're here for that reason. We're not here to give to you, although we give you praise. We're not here to do for you, although we worship. We come, like Isaiah said, no God like you who works for those who wait on him. We come to wait. We come to look. We come to rest. We come to find. We come to seek. And you tell me in the day of trouble, I will call on you and you will answer and I will glorify you. And that is what we're here to do. Massive needs in this place this morning, Lord. Huge needs. Needs unspoken. Some needs that we can't even articulate because they are so overwhelming. But we come today because we need and because you are a God who has broken into this world to bring your kingdom in and to change us. Meet with us. Please do that. For the sake of your glory. Amen. Amen. The past couple of weeks, there's been a special that's been running on one of the local television stations, and I think it's got a couple more weeks to go. It's called something like The World's Most Amazing Magic Secrets Revealed, or something like that. I mean, some of you know that in my college years, I did some of that. I did some magic, illusions, stage magic kind of stuff. In fact, my senior project as a theater major was an hour and a half illusion show of stuff that I had built. You know, I made people vanish and float in the air and cut them in thirds and all that fun stuff. And invariably, when people see magic or they'll see the television special or they'll see David Copperfield do something, typically the amazement of what happens is followed by two things. That is, amazement looks like, wow, that's the first thing. There's usually a wow when somebody does something startling, you know, makes an elephant disappear or changes an attractive young lady into a tiger. There's the first, wow, that's the first response to amazement. But then I find there's often a second response to amazement, and the second response to amazement is the how. How did he do that? How did he do that? And so, because people know that I've done magic, oftentimes I'll have people come up and they'll ask, so, do you know how he did that? Mm-hmm. I do. And they'll ask, so how did he do that? And I'll say, pretty well. He did that, really. He did it pretty well. But there's that twofold response, the wow and the how. That's the kind of response that comes when we're amazed. And it happens not just in that setting. I mean, I think about the young guy who out shooting hoops, loves the game of basketball, and perhaps he's watching an NBA game, and there some great player makes a move at the free throw line, takes the ball behind his back, spins in the air, clears two defenders, and dunks over his head, you know? And that young basketball player looks at that and goes, wow! That's the first response. And then he goes, how did he do that? I want to be able to do that next time out on the court. So there's that wow and how response. And it comes up in other places, too, when we're amazed. I think about perhaps a young singer who's interested in maybe one day singing, and she's watching American Idol or America's Got Talent, and some gal out there, barely out of her teens, just nails a great number, hits the high notes, and the whole crowd goes wild. And that young singer goes, wow, that was just amazing. And then they follow up with a, how could I get there? I'd like to get there. So there's this response that comes to amazement. There are things that happen, stir in us when we're amazed or astonished or astounded, and we get that kind of response. Last week, Charlie talked about amazement. As we've been working through the Gospel of Mark, through that portion of Mark's Gospel, last week, Charlie talked with us about how Jesus entered the synagogue and he taught there and did something there that astonished people. And I was thinking about that this week. I was thinking, okay, so they were astonished. What was their response? You see, when the response of the illusion or the great dunk or the Olympic event or the singer who nails that song, our response in wow is usually wow and we applaud. And sometimes we ask the how question, how did that happen? But it was interesting to me as I was looking through Mark that I don't know that that was the response of those who were astonished or amazed by Jesus. I don't think polite applause went up. Because I don't think it was about being entertained. They were astonished and amazed and something else followed. And I don't think it was astonishment and amazement and then simply, but I wonder how he did that. How did he do that? I think there's actually something else that comes out of their astonishment or amazement. And what I want to explore a little bit this morning is, what's the right response to astonishment? That is, when you're astonished by Jesus, what should follow? What would be the right thing to follow? We're going to spend some time in Mark and looking at that. We're in Mark because Jesus is the heart of everything. We're in Mark because Jesus is at the center of life. And everybody that you meet, whether in church or out of church, tends to think something about Jesus. The sad thing is a lot of people think about Jesus, Jesus of their own imagining, in a sense. A Jesus they created. Jesus who isn't the real Jesus. They just create an image of Jesus in their minds and have a supposed relationship with that Jesus. Well, he can't give them the life that he offers. Only the real Jesus can give us real life. And so we're working our way through the Gospel of Mark because here we have the account of eyewitnesses who saw, interacted with Jesus. And we want to build from that to understanding how we can have this relationship and life with Jesus, because this is the real Jesus who gives real life, and that's what we want to do. We're hoping to drill down into the bedrock of the Gospel by moving through Mark. And we've been in Mark for a few weeks, and we've got many weeks to go, hoping to come to understand and know this Jesus better. Last week, Charlie took us to the synagogue. The synagogue was that local worship place in a city in Palestine. This one was in Capernaum, where Jesus goes in. And on a given Sabbath morning, the ruler of the synagogue would look out over the congregation and find any of the Jewish men that he had regard for and ask them to come forward and read from the Scriptures and teach. And on this particular Sabbath morning, Jesus does. And once he's read, he begins to teach, and he teaches in such a way, like Charlie talked about last week, the people were astonished. There is something remarkably different about how this guy speaks than anybody else we've ever heard speak before. But it doesn't end there. Jesus' ministry in that synagogue morning, that Sabbath morning, was more than just in word. It was indeed, because as he taught, there was a demonized guy. Now, demonized guy, I don't know what you think about demonized guys, but they don't wear little name tags. Hi, I'm Joe, I'm demonized. He's sitting in the synagogue. He's not foaming at the mouth, rolling in the floor. He is right there in the synagogue, and when he stands up to speak, apparently what Jesus said was so provocative that the demon couldn't remain silent. So this demonized guy cries out, and Jesus, with a word, ends it all. The man is delivered and set free. And that really now astounds and amazes the people, so much so that they started debating among themselves, what is this? A new teaching with authority. There's something going on here. It just staggers us. That's not surprising because we've already been noticing that what's going on in Jesus is God's kingdom is breaking in a decisive and a particular way in the person of Jesus. So it's not surprising that astonishing things are happening because where Jesus goes, the kingdom is breaking in. And so Jesus is in the synagogue. He's been teaching. People are astonished and amazed. And I want to ask the question, so what do we do with the astonishment? Should we just nicely applaud? Jesus, that was a great job you did. Really like that. Should we ask him, how did you do that? Would that be the right response to the astonishment? And as Mark continues to tell his story, I think we get to see what the right response to astonishment is. So I'm going to read from Mark chapter 1, verse 29, all the way through the end of the chapter. It's a rather substantial chunk. We're going to try to follow along Mark's flow. I'm going to read, and as I read, I'm going to offer a few comments on some of the verses that need some comments. So I'm going to read that whole section, just walking it through, offering a couple of observations. Then I'm going to come back and try to get the big picture, okay? So we'll do two parts. We'll do an analysis. We're just going to look deeply as we walk through, and then we're going to take a step back and try to get the big picture. So follow along with me. I'm in Mark chapter 1. Let's pick up at the end of the account in the synagogue in verse 28. And at once, this amazing thing happens in the synagogue. At once, his fame spread everywhere throughout all the surrounding region of Galilee. Now, they didn't have internet there. They didn't have web access. There were no cell phones that you could download instant messages to. So when it says here, at once his fame spread everywhere, you don't need to think that on that Sabbath day, everyone in Galilee now knew. Like stone dropped in the water, though, the report of Jesus begins to go out through all Galilee. And then verse 29, and immediately, that's one of Mark's favorite words, immediately. As we work our way through the Gospel of Mark, you'll find that word come up a lot. Don't think of immediately as Jesus is in a rush. Jesus is in a hurry. He ran out of the synagogue. The word simply means the very next thing. It's kind of like when you tell people about your vacation. You go on a vacation for a week, right? And you tell them, well, I got on the plane, and then the next thing was when we got to the hotel, well, you know what? There's a long time between the time you got on the plane and the time you got on the hotel. But you're telling them the high points, and you tell it to them as the events that happened. And so the next significant thing, the next important thing was, and that's how you'll tell the story of your vacation. And that's how Mark is telling us. When you read immediately, you just need to understand, here's the next big thing that happened. We're going from thing to thing. He left the synagogue, and it's not like we don't know that Simon's mother-in-law's house, that's where they're going, was right next door to the synagogue. He may have had to go out the synagogue and down the street and up the lane. But the next thing is, he gets to Simon, mother-in-law's house. Immediately he left the synagogue and entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. These are the four guys that he started to gather around himself at this point. Now Simon's mother-in-law lay ill with fever, and immediately they told him about her. And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her, and she began to serve them. Here's something to note about Mark. Mark, because of the way he's writing and because whose story he's telling us, sometimes gives us a great deal of detail. Notice that if Mark wanted to tell us that Jesus healed Simon's mother-in-law, he would have told us Jesus healed Simon's mother-in-law. What does he tell us? He tells us more than that. I want you to think as we move through Mark of these as little snapshots, pictures that you should be able to hold in your hand and look at. What does it tell us? It tells us that when Jesus found out about Simon's mother-in-law, he went to her, he took her by the hand, he raised her up, and then the fever left her. Why does Jesus do that? That just tells you something about the kind of person Jesus is, the kind of care he has. He doesn't treat Simon's mother-in-law as that illness in the other room. He responds to her as a person, and that's one of the things that you'll notice as we read through Mark. The kind of pictures he gives us of Jesus helps inform my understanding of the kind of guy Jesus is. So he comes to her, takes her by the hand, and lifts her up, and the fever leaves her, and she begins to serve them. And then at that evening, at sundown, they brought to him, Sabbath, the Jews counted days from sundown to sundown. Sabbath would have started Friday at sundown and gone to Saturday at sundown. We're reading about a Sabbath day because Jesus starts in the synagogue on Sabbath morning, and there he taught. Well, when the sun goes down, Sabbath is over, and now work can be done. Because apparently the word went out from the synagogue. Jesus did some really weird things in the synagogue this morning. It was pretty wild. And then word got out. Somehow word got out from Simon, mother-in-law's house, that she's up. Jesus went in and something happened to Simon's mother-in-law. And so when sun had set, now that the Sabbath was over, work could begin. Because it's work to carry sick people. It's work to carry the infirm, and so once the sun sets, now the work begins, and they begin bringing to him those who are sick and those who are demonized, and Mark tells us the whole city was gathered around the door. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean every individual in the city, but we're talking about this is a citywide event. Capernaum was a rather substantial city. I don't know how you think about it. Don't think about it as a couple of people knocking at the door. You need to be thinking of it as hundreds of people hanging around Simon mother-in-law's house, and there they are. And it says that Jesus goes out and he healed many of them who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he was not permitting the demons to speak because they knew who he was. So Mark gives us a summation there, a summary statement of what happened that evening. It was an evening of rich, wonderful, in-breaking ministry. The kingdom was coming in the lives of these people in profound and transformational ways. And there, Jesus ministers. And Mark sums it up. He healed many of those who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. So that's the end of that Saturday. Next morning, Jesus arises very early in the morning. While it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed. Just a little side note here. I know that sometimes this verse is used to drive home the point that you should have daily quiet times early in the morning. Don't leverage the verse too much. As we move through the Gospel of Mark, we'll find that Jesus is a prayer. He prays. This, I think, is the only place where it says he got up early in the morning. You know when Mark tells us Jesus prays more often than that? He prays all night through. How many of you would like to do your quiet times that way? See, you just got to make sure that you don't leverage too much. The passage does tell us that Jesus prays. It tells us he rose early in the morning to do that. So if you have your quiet time, your personal time with God early in the morning, that's okay. Just make sure that you don't overread the text. Because candidly, I don't think any of you are doing your quiet time like Jesus does. Because notice what he gets up and leaves, goes to a desolate place, your living room, in your PJs with your coffee. That's not quite the same as leaving and going to a desolate place and they're praying. Good for you to be praying. Just don't leverage this passage too much. Jesus goes and prays. And it says that when he's out there praying, Simon and his companions came hunting for him. It's a strong word. Like they're on a hunt, literally. They came looking for him, and they found him, and they said, "Everyone is looking for you." What's going on? Well, after the ministry the night before, apparently more people showed up. There's more people in Capernaum who have needs, and they're now at Simon's mother-in-law's house and waiting. And Simon comes and simply says, "They're there. You did that last night, so..." And notice what Jesus says. Jesus says, "Let's go to the next towns that I may preach there also, for that is what I came out for." And verse 39, he went then throughout all Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and casting out demons. Mark is telling us that Jesus didn't stay in Capernaum. What he did in Capernaum, he began to do other places throughout all Galilee, giving us a summary statement there in verse 39. Throughout all Galilee, preaching in their synagogues, casting out the demons, we can anticipate the same kind of thing happening elsewhere where Jesus went. And now we get another close-up, starting in verse 40. On this journey throughout Galilee, a leper comes to him. And it says that this leper you need to know a little bit about lepers. Leprosy was a disease that afflicted the skin, and it marked you out. It was evident. You could see it. Apparently, there were a variety of diseases that were identified as leprosy in the Old Testament. Some leprosy, the more severe forms of leprosy, actually kill nerve endings. And so what happens is you lose your feeling in your toes, in your feet. And as a result, when they get infected or burned or you don't feel it, they don't get tended, you end up with deformity, loss of use, sometimes blindness, deafness, a variety of things that all happen because of leprosy. But on top of the very wickedness of the disease, leprosy was also considered a disease that rendered someone ritually unclean. You could be paralyzed and not necessarily unclean. If you were a leper that you were unclean, that meant you were a social outcast. You could not live with other people. You had to live by yourself or among other lepers. In fact, a leper, if a leper came into a town, which would have been a very rare thing, if a leper came into town at a certain distance, and the distance was based on how far you were upwind or downwind from the people, at a certain distance, you had to start shouting at the top of your voice, "Unclean, unclean," so that people would scatter and leave you. This is the leper. The leper comes to Jesus, and falling on his knees before him, he beseeches him and says, "If you're willing, you can make me clean." And again, if Mark simply wanted to tell us, "Oh, Jesus heals lepers," that's what he would have told us. But pay attention to how Mark describes it. The man comes, falls on his knees before him, crying out, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." And it says, Jesus, filled with compassion, stretches forth his hand and touches the leper. What do you think is going on in the crowd as Jesus starts to do that? Yes, a loud shout of, "No!" don't do that, you know, because this guy's not only diseased, but he's unclean. You have to see that as it. Jesus reaches out his hand and sets it on the leper and says, I am willing, be clean. And then Mark tells us a little more that happens. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. And Jesus sternly charged him and sent him away at once and said to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them. What's going on here? I don't think Jesus is capricious. I don't think Jesus is just giving the man stuff to do. Because leprosy renders the man unclean, the man needs more than just physical healing. The man needs restoration. And the way restoration would have been achieved would be to get a certificate of cleanliness from the priests. And so if the man, let's say this man has been healed of his leprosy, he knows it, Jesus knows it, he runs into town shouting, I'm healed, I'm healed. What will the crowd do? They'll still run away. They'll still run away. Because his affirmation that he's healed isn't enough to make him clean. He needs something more than that. So Jesus' instruction to the man is actually for the man's good. Jesus wants to deal with the man and all of his needs. His need is not only to be healed, but to be made recognizably clean. And so he sends him to the priest and says, offer for your healing, your cleansing, what Moses prescribed, and show yourself to the priest. And that way he could be restored to the community. Well, Mark tells us it didn't happen quite that way. The man went out and began to talk freely about it and to spread the news so that Jesus could no longer openly enter a town, but was out in the desolate places, and people were coming to him from every quarter. Now, there's the flow, 29 through 45. I've just touched on some things. I don't get to drill down on all of that this morning. The devotional guide that comes every week, if you want, you can drill down a little bit deeper on some of those episodes. It's available in the Fellowship Mall, out in the Welcome Center, and also on the website. But what I want to do is I want to take a step back now. Now that we've looked at these pieces, I want to take a step back and look at what is it that Mark is telling us? Why not just report Jesus came out of the synagogue and he healed this person and he healed those people and he healed, that was what Jesus did. Why not just tell us that? Why describe for us what goes on? Why describe these reports? What is Mark driving at? And I think what Mark is driving at is helping me understand how people respond in amazement to Jesus. So let me just walk you through the flow. In the synagogue, the people are amazed and they're astonished. Why are they amazed? Because he taught and because he delivered one guy. So here in the synagogue, when Jesus is here, he teaches and they're astonished, amazed, and he delivers one guy from a demon. That's pretty amazing, but that's what they've got. Now, when they leave the synagogue, they go into Simon and Andrew's mother-in-law's house. Simon and Andrew, James and John, they've been amazed by Jesus. They've been amazed at his teaching. They've been amazed at what happened with the demonized guy. But they don't have Matthew and Luke to read yet. They don't know anything else about Jesus but that. What they know is he's a pretty impressive speaker and he did something really weird with the demonized guy. That's all they got. But that's astonishing. That's all they got. When they get home, did you notice what Mark says they did? They told him about her. That's an interesting way to put it. What they didn't do was ask, would you heal mom? Why didn't they ask that? I don't think they know whether he can do that kind of thing. They've never seen him do that. So they simply kind of, he's pretty impressive. What do you think? Should we say something? And they don't even ask him. They don't even say, would you go see her? They simply go, she's sick. That's what Mark tells us. I think what's going on there is that Simon and Andrew are building from their astonishment and extrapolating a little bit. I'm pretty impressed with that guy. I wonder if he might be able to do something about mom. And in that sense, they risk with him a little bit. Tell him about her. Risk in the sense of, I don't know what he's going to do. I'm not exactly sure. We don't have any track record here. See, they don't have the rest of the Gospels. You already know the kinds of stuff that Jesus is going to do. They don't. He's a really impressive teacher. He did that weird thing with the demonized guy, so maybe he can do something about mom. And so they simply say, mom's sick. And Jesus comes, takes her by the hand, and raises her up, and the fever leaves her. Pretty amazing. The report now goes out to the crowd outside the city. I mean, out in the city, in Capernaum. Mark tells us the whole city gathers, the crowd gathers. Who gathers? It says, those who were sick with various diseases. Huh. Think about that for just a minute. Why did those people come? Do you think that the only people that were brought was little old ladies with fevers? Do you think that's what they brought? Capernaum was filled with little old ladies with fevers. That's what they brought? No, it says that they were sick with various diseases. Why did the crowd show up with people of a whole variety of illnesses and afflictions show up? I think they extrapolated. They went a little farther. Fever, that's not a serious illness. Jesus is a nice, impressive guy. He did help Simon's mother-in-law over her fever. Maybe he can do something about paralysis or deafness. Maybe he can do something about blindness or epilepsy. And they began bringing to him those who were afflicted with various diseases. I don't think they knew for sure. I don't think they were convinced exactly what Jesus would do. But what's happening is the amazement stirs them to think, you know what, I got a need. I have a need. Maybe I could risk in the sense of, I'm not sure what he's going to do because I don't have much track record. Really impressive teaching, a demonized guy and one old lady. But maybe I could bring my need to him and Jesus would do something about it. And Jesus spends the night and the kingdom breaks in the lives of these people and transformational things start to happen because Jesus is there. And they came in their amazement and risked with him their need. And to make sure that we understand that dynamic, what's going on there, Mark then gives us the close-up of the leper. There's the fourth little piece, the close-up of the leper. Did you hear how it was that the leper came? Do you hear what he says? He comes. He has to work his way through the crowd. He falls on his face before Jesus and says, if you're willing, you could do something about this. That's a pretty amazing thing to say. What's he saying? He said, I'm not even sure that you will. He had to work his way through the crowd. Talk about how difficult that must have been for the leper. Crying out, unclean, unclean, everyone running. He's going to have to make a beeline to Jesus before Jesus and everybody scatters. I don't know that he knows exactly what Jesus is going to do because he says, if you're willing, you might be able to do something about this. Man does the same thing. In his amazement, what he's seen and heard about Jesus has been enough to say, I have a need. I don't know exactly what Jesus will do about it, but the thing I need to do is I need to get my need before Jesus and ask him to act. I think that's the proper response to amazement. It's not to politely applaud. It's not simply to wow and then to how. I wonder how he did that. The people heard enough, saw enough in Jesus to be astonished with him, but the astonishment didn't lead to simply being entertained by what he did. Their astonishment led to their taking a risk. And what I mean by that is they're not certain what he's going to do. They're just amazed and astonished that something powerful, something kingdom is going on in this Jesus. And it's enough, even if I don't know exactly what he's going to do with my need, I'm going to risk telling him about it and seeing what he will do. Their astonishment led them to taking that risk that maybe this amazing man might just be able to do something for me in my point of need. I think that's what we need to see. Now, it's true that we're not physically present with Jesus the way they were. And so you might think, well, since I'm not physically present, how do we do the same thing? The truth is, Jesus, the person of Jesus, is alive, and he is just as present in this room as he was with the leper. The person of Jesus is just as present in this place as he was in Simon and Andrew's mother-in-law's house. He's just as present. You may not see him. He is just as present. So what should we do? Let me ask a couple questions. Here's the first question. Have you heard enough about Jesus to be astonished by the things he does? That's the first question. Have you heard enough about Jesus to be astonished by the things that he's done? Do you know the people in Capernaum who came and first congregated around Simon, mother-in-law's house, some of them had no personal, first-hand contact with Jesus, I'm sure. You know, the ones back in the dark, way back in the back. Hundreds of people gathered around the door. There's got to be some people back here in the dark. And they just heard something weird happened in the synagogue this morning, and the demonized guy, and then this old lady got better. I have a need. I've heard enough about Jesus to astonish me by him. They may not have had yet any first-hand contact, so they show up. So the first question is, have you heard enough about Jesus to be really astonished and amazed by him? Then comes the second question. Are you desperate enough in your need to risk coming to him with your need to see what he will do? I've been thinking about that. The truth is, the people who came to Jesus didn't come the way that I come. I come to Jesus, and sometimes it's in worship, sometimes it's in prayer. I come to Jesus with my needs, and I tend primarily to come for two things. One, I come to grumble. One, I come for advice. I don't like how things are going. You haven't been paying attention, things aren't going very well. What should I do about this? That's how I come. Oftentimes, in my praying, that's how I come. I come with a need, but I come to grumble, complain about how he's doing it, and ask him what I'm supposed to do about it. You know what? I don't think anybody came to Jesus that way. I don't think the leper came thinking, my limbs are falling off, my skin is diseased, no one will have anything to do with me. What do you think I should do about that, Jesus? I think he came and said, please, would you change me? Would you do something? The people were coming not to get good advice. It's not bad to get good advice from Jesus. But I think he offers so much more. But sometimes I'm not desperate enough in my need. I don't really want him to break in. I just want him a little help, a little counsel, a little advice. I'm doing pretty well. Thank you very much. The leper wouldn't have said that. I think some years ago about a man who came to me in marriage conflict. And he came with a very common kind of thing. I don't love my wife anymore. And so I'm thinking, oh, gosh, I got that many books on the bookshelf that talk about how husbands are supposed to love their wives. So which book do we start with? Which good advice do I share with him about how he should grow to love his wife? But whether it was grace. I thought a little differently about it on that particular afternoon, and I said, well, since Scripture commands you to love your wife, that's what Jesus wants you to do, it sounds to me like you need to be changed. You don't need advice. You already know. You know you're supposed to love your wife. You just don't. What you need is change. You need the kingdom to break into your soul and change you. Would you like to pray with me that God would give you a joyful love for your wife? That's like the leper. I have a need. I need you to do something. I don't need just advice. I need the kingdom to break in and change this. And so before the day was out, he said, yeah, let's pray that. He came back in 2 weeks to talk with me, and I asked him, so how are you doing? And he said, I'm ecstatic. You're ecstatic? Why? Because he says, I'm waking up every day and something is going on in my heart. He's astonished and amazed by what Jesus is doing. That's what's supposed to happen. And now he's bringing his needs to Jesus, and his astonishment led him to the place where he could risk that need. Something's got to happen there, and I don't want just advice and help and counsel. I need to be changed. I need you to break in. Question is, are you desperate enough in your need to risk coming to Jesus with your need to see what he might do? Third thing, are you then willing to abandon yourself and your need to his care and wait and watch? That's how the leper comes. If you're willing, you can. He's not waiting for advice. He's waiting for Jesus to act.
What do you do when you're amazed with Jesus? Do you just politely applaud? Oh, I'm impressed. You do good stuff.
Do you just wonder about, I wonder how he did that?
Well, incredible. Never seen anybody do that.
Or will you allow your amazement and astonishment lead you to the place where you will take your needs before him, and rather than seeking advice or counsel or help, you'll just lay it out there and say, please act. Do something, because in you the kingdom is coming. And if the kingdom doesn't come in this situation, you may think, but I'm not physically present with Jesus. But the truth is that we have available to us nearly everything that they had. You see a picture of Jesus presented here. You just need to come to the Jesus who is presented here. You know the kind of man that he is by the things that he does. That's how they knew the kind of man that he was. And they came based on what they heard about him. You can come based on what you have heard about him. And you can, if you have been astonished enough, you could come and risk your needs with him and wait and see what he might do. Now, you may have noticed in my summary, I skipped over Jesus' prayer and his response. When they came and looked for him and he was out there praying, he did say, let's go to the next towns also. And somehow this needs to fit into this. Minimally, what is going on there is that Jesus says, now, I do have an agenda, I do have a mission. The mission is cultivated in prayer, and my mission is rooted in what I came out to do. That means he does leave Capernaum. What does that mean for us? That may mean for us that there will be times when we come to Jesus with our needs and we may not get our preferred future. But that doesn't mean that we don't come to Jesus with our needs and the kingdom won't break in there. The problem is I don't anticipate any breaking into the kingdom. I only want help, advice, counsel. I don't want change. Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, talks about his need. He had a thorn in the flesh, apparently some kind of physical affliction. And he came to Jesus with his physical affliction. He didn't say, Lord, help me understand what I'm supposed to do about this. He said, do something about this, please. And you know, some of you that know the story realize that Paul's physical affliction wasn't taken away.
But he experienced God in that moment.
It wasn't enough to get good advice. He experienced God in the moment of need. He risked his need, and Jesus showed up and changed Paul in the moment.
That needs to happen.
What I'm saying is that what we must see, what I want you to see, is that if you come to Jesus with your need, he's going to be this kind of Jesus. He longs to do amazing, astonishing things because that's who he is. That's the kind of God we meet in him. That's what he came to do. The kingdom is breaking in, not just to then and there, but here and now.
Are you amazed enough with him,
with his authority and his teaching? Are you amazed enough with him, with his power and his compassion? Are you amazed enough with him and his wisdom and his tenderness? Are you amazed enough with him to risk, because you're not sure what he's going to do, but to risk coming with your need and seeing what he'll do?
Don't come for advice only. Lay the need out and tell him, yeah, you need him to act in this situation.
Some of you are struggling in relationship with your kids. You've sought the counsel. You've gotten good advice. You're trying to be good parents. And the kids, things just are not good between you and the kids. And when you go to the Lord and talk with him about it, what do? Do you gripe and ask for help, advice, counsel? Or do you say, please act.
Do something, Jesus.
I have no other hope. See, when I come and ask Jesus for advice, I tend to think, I can still do something about this. I just don't know what to do about this. So if you tell me what to do about it, then I can do something about it. And I erect my little idol. Brian's got his life together. He just needs a little more advice and he can run his life pretty well. And then I don't get any advice. And I feel like nothing's happening. How come he's not answering my prayer? Because maybe what needs to happen is that something radical, transformational needs to happen.
Maybe I need to be bringing my need and say, I don't know what to do about this. And I can't do anything about this unless you step into the situation and change things. Like in your marriage. Like I told you about the guy. Who, yes, change me. Make my heart different. Don't just help me through this. Make me different. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a work relationship. Maybe it's a financial need. You know, he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. That is not just cliche. Our God is not short on resources to meet needs. Maybe there's something dark and troubling in the life of somebody that you know. Maybe it's demonic. My experience suggests to me that advice doesn't help the demonized very much. It takes Jesus showing up and doing something great. Maybe it's a physical need. Maybe it's a physical need. I think Jesus is still in the business of doing that. He still heals people. We come with very little expectation. We want advice as to how to live in the midst of our affliction. And that's not bad. But sometimes he's still in the healing business. I do want you to know, I do not believe that you are guaranteed perfect health. In fact, not to be a bearer of bad news, you all are going to die. The scripture says so. You're all going to die. You're not promised perfect health forever. Not in this body. You get another body. But Jesus still is in the healing business. He's still in the delivering business. He's still in the transformation business. Do we come with our needs and ask, please act, do something kingdom? I'm not even going to advise you. You just do something consistent with who you are. I think if we did that, we would be responding to amazement the right way, and I think we would see more of Jesus and be more amazed at what he does and what he'd like to do. Come for intervention. Come to Jesus so that the kingdom might break in. Having heard enough about Jesus to be astonished by him, bring your biggest needs to him and lay them out before him and see what he might do. I believe it's consistent to say the kingdom's going to come there in a fresh way. Here's what I want you to do. We got time. You don't get to go for a while, so you have time to do this. What I want you to do is I want you to pray some. I don't want you to pray phony words. I don't have any words to give you to pray. But as we've been talking about this, some of you realize, oh, I've been griping to God about my needs, but I haven't really laid it before him and said, please act here. Some of you have been seeking advice or counsel. What should I do about this? And giving you advice and counsel is not going to help because there's something that has to change in you. Some of you are facing big needs and you're just scared to talk to Jesus about it because you're afraid if you hold it out there, you don't know what he's going to do. And that feels like letting go and giving up control, and that scares the bejeebies out of you. I don't know how to do that. So what I want to invite you to do in your own words, in your place, I want you to take whatever your biggest needs are and like the people who came in Capernaum. I've heard enough about Jesus to be amazed and astonished. I think Jesus is a pretty impressive guy. I got this need. Jesus, here's my need. Would you please do something? You can stay seated. You can pray quietly. You can pray under your breath. You can stand if you want. You can kneel. You can raise your hands. You can do whatever you need to do in the next few minutes to respond to this amazing Jesus with whatever your biggest need is. And then we'll continue to worship him.